recognizing that and living that out through this strong pull that we have towards sexuality. This morning, he continues on a similar path and kind of unpackages it a little bit more in some specifics. And he talks about singleness, and he talks about marriage, and he talks about sexuality in those kind of two different kind of places in life. And you might be here this morning and you're single, or you might be here this morning and you're married. Those are two common, very common states. And Paul is here in Corinthians giving some handles on how do we live fulfilled and called no matter what state we might be in. So that's what he's doing in chapter 7 here, and we're going to unpackage that a little bit. He's responding to some questions, some specific questions that they ask. Now, we don't have the record of the questions. We just have a record of Paul's answers, but we can kind of read into it what the questions were by this. And I'm going to read this, and by the time I get through these 17 verses, you might have more questions than you had at the beginning. But that's why we're going to spend a few minutes, and we'll get through this and get into communion with his important participation time in the morning. Chapter 7, verse 1 of 1 Corinthians, it says, "Now regarding the questions you asked in your letter, yes, it is good to abstain from sexual relations." I'm assuming he's asking, the question is, in singleness, what do we do? "But because there is so much sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife, and each woman should have her own husband. The husband should fulfill his wife's sexual needs, and the wife should fulfill her husband's needs. The wife gives authority over her body to her husband, and the husband gives authority over his body to his wife. Do not deprive each other of sexual relations unless you both agree to refrain from sexual intimacy for a limited time so that you can give yourselves more completely to prayer. Afterward, you should come together again so that Satan won't be able to tempt you because of your lack of self-control. I say this as a concession, not as a command. But I wish everyone were single, just as I am. Yet each person has a special gift from God of one kind or another. So I say to those who aren't married and to widows, it's better to stay unmarried just as I am. But if they can't control themselves, they should go ahead and marry. It's better to marry than to burn with lust. But for those who are married, I have a command that comes not from me, but from the Lord. A wife must not leave her husband. If she does leave him, let her remain single or else be reconciled to him, and the husband must not leave his wife. Now I speak to the rest of you, though I do not have a direct command from the Lord. If a Christian man has a wife who is not a believer and she is willing to continue living with him, he must not leave her. And if a Christian woman has a husband who is not a believer and he is willing to continue living with her, she must not leave him. For the Christian wife brings holiness to her marriage, and the Christian husband brings holiness to his marriage. Otherwise, your children would not be holy, but now they are holy. But if the husband or wife who isn't a believer insists on leaving, let them go. In such cases, the Christian husband or wife is no longer bound to the other, for God has called you to live in peace. Don't you realize that your husbands might be saved because of you? And don't you husbands realize that your wives might be saved because of you? Each of you should continue to live in whatever situation the Lord has placed you and remain as you were when God first called you. This is my rule for all the churches." So Paul here is addressing specific questions in a specific context, and I think it's important that we recognize that right off the start. He's talking to people who are asking questions. They're saying, in light of this new calling that we have, this new kind of life, and understanding sexuality as God intended it, that it's something that involves our personhood. It's not a commodity. It's actually something very different than this other worship. And I mentioned before that they worshiped the god of love, Aphrodite. They had this temple. They had prostitutes. It was part of their temple worship to actually get involved in sexual relationships. So these people are trying to understand this whole new concept and going, okay, now, is sex bad? Is it good? You know, what if I'm single? What if I'm married? How does this fit into my life now? Now, this is a strong pull in my life, and yet I also have this strong pull towards you, God. How do I live that out? God is interested in every part of our lives. So Paul here is speaking specifically to their situations and saying, here's how I want you to express your sexuality if you're a single person, if you're a married person. And so we're going to kind of look at that a little bit this morning and see what God might have for us in whatever place we might be. Because I know that in today's society, though we might not have some kind of weird temple worship thing going on like that, there are strong messages today about our identities, about who we are and our sexuality and our place in life, whether we are single or whether we're married. This is very common for all of us because it's out there. It's in our media all the time. It's kind of this whole thing of, who are you? Are you a happening person? Are you hip? Are you cool? Are you sexy? Are you hot? Are you glam? Are you married? Are you single? Where do you want to be in this? And it's a very interesting thing because I was reading this book this week too. It's called The Vertical Self. And in it, this young 20-something was kind of expressing the kind of world that we live in right now where you get to sort of choose your identity. You know, if you got a Facebook page, you sort of have this thing you can lay out there and say, okay, I'm this person, right? And this is who I am. And we create these identities and, you know, we sort of pick up our cues. We might not recognize it, but we pick up our cues from a lot of social media out there, a lot of media that's going on. I have a good friend whose good friend has become a rock star and is in like the top 40 charts and that sort of thing. And he's actually married and has a child. But for the purposes of his image and his identity out there to be kind of sought after, he's listed as single. And, you know, that might seem pretty extreme. But I think oftentimes we take our identities and we take our cues from so much of what's going on in society and say, you know, I'm married or I'm happily married or I'm not married or I'm unhappily not married. And we kind of build identities for ourselves around that. And Paul here is kind of coming at it from a whole different viewpoint. Our sermon series is called Different. And it's important to understand how do we deal with these questions of singleness and sexuality and marriage from a different point of view. The different point of view is this. Paul was trying to help them understand that you have a whole new identity. If you're a Christ follower, if you've entered into this relationship with Christ, you belong to God. You belong to Him. Check out 2 Corinthians 5, verse 16 and 17. It says, at one time we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view. How differently we know Him now. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone. A new life has become. Another translation says, you're a whole new creation. Something absolutely foundationally different has happened in your life. And I want you to understand that. There's a calling that comes into your life, and it's about this vertical self, this relationship with God, that it defines you like nothing else can. It's actually a place of absolute freedom because we're no longer just defined by our horizontal relationships. It's not whether I'm single, whether I'm married, where I'm at in this whole sexuality thing. It's actually, now I have God as my Lord. He actually gives me my cues. He's actually my boss. And He's good, and He's loving, and He's kind. He's my forgiver. When I mess up, it's not like a horizontal relationship where, okay, now how does this affect my identity? It's like, I am belong to Him. Nothing ever changes that. It's like this uber identity that's like bigger than anything else. So whether I'm single, whether I'm married, where I'm happy in those situations, whatever it might be, that's not what fulfills me. That's not what ultimately fulfills me. There's a classic line from a classic movie from way back. It's a while ago now, but there's Tom Cruise walking in and saying, "You complete me." And everybody going, "Oh, that's the most romantic line ever." And I think we understand that on a certain level, but on another level, no other person can complete us. I talked a little bit last week about that. People can compliment us. Like there's a complimentation of it. It's kind of like there's another great movie from even further back, Rocky Balboa. Remember he's being asked about his relationship with Adrian? And he's kind of this guy who goes, "I don't know." You know, Paulie's asking, "What do you like in her?" And he goes, "I don't know. She got gaps. I got gaps. Together we fill the gaps." And there is a truth to that. You know, when we find relationship and our companion and soulmate for life, there is the gaps that fill in. But it's not everything. It's not ultimately our identity. We cannot find it in another person, whether single or married. And so Paul's saying, I want you to understand this. In Philippians 3, verse 8 and 10, he says, "Yes, everything else is worthless when compared with the infinite value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. I want to know Christ and experience the mighty power that raised Him from the dead." You know, that's challenging. I read that and I go, you know, to know Christ and experience his mighty power, can I actually know that no matter my place in life? Maybe I'm single and I would long to be married. Maybe I'm married and this isn't working out really well and I kind of wish I was single. And he's saying, you know, when you know Christ and you know his power, when that kind of mighty power, and we celebrate that at communion, it raised him from the dead, can that bring new life to me? Last week, and I mentioned this, we talked about this verse. Don't you realize, 1 Corinthians 6, that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who lives in you and was given to you by God? You do not belong to yourself, for God bought you with a high price. So you must honor God with your body. You know, when it comes to sexuality, Paul's recognizing, and he deals with it very practically in this passage that we're looking at this morning, but he realizes that this is a very strong pull. But he says, ultimately, when you recognize that God gave his body for yours, that it actually belongs to him, then you say, you know what, God, if you've got some parameters, if you've got some rules around this sexuality thing, and even if I don't see it and understand it, I believe that is best expressed. It is only expressed when I can give my personhood to another person in the context of a lifelong committed relationship. That's the kind of covenantal love that God gives for us. And when we look at communion, that's what it means. That this is God's covenant. This is him saying, no matter what, I am absolutely, I'm all in. Like, I've actually given my body for you. We read this every time we do this in 1 Corinthians 11. A few chapters later, it says, this is my body, which is given for you. This is God saying, no matter what, I'm all in with you. I am absolutely committed. And in that kind of relationship, we can give ourselves completely. Paul says, I want sexuality to be within that context. He's also saying with this, if that hasn't been where you've been at, if that isn't where you are even presently, you can find forgiveness. You can get back on track. You can say, God, I want a fresh start. I want to start again with you. And he brings us from brokenness into wholeness. That's also what communion says. It's God making us holy. I'm going to skip over here to 1 Corinthians 1:2. It says, I'm writing to God's church in Corinth, to you who have been called to be his own holy people. He made you holy by means of Christ Jesus. To be holy. You know, a lot of people think holy, that's almost equated with weird, maybe dork, maybe very unsexy. But what it really is, what holiness really is wholeness. It's actually coming to our true selves, our true identity, and recognizing this is me. It's not about sexuality and who I am in that. It's not this kind of world that defines me by that. It's actually God saying, all of you, your personhood, including your sexuality, is what I made and I want to honor through your life and I want to live that out through you, whether you're single or married. So if Jesus is your reality and identity, you and I can live called and fulfilled in life, period. Now that's a very dramatic statement when you think about it, because we look at our circumstances around us, we think, a lot of my relationships are not good. They might be quite broken. There might be levels of brokenness there. There might be a little bit of disappointment, maybe in our lifelong partner. There might be a lot. There might be a little bit of disappointment in, I'm single and I really wish I had somebody. But God says, you know what? When you come into a relationship with me, and this isn't easy, this is a process. It's something that we don't all of a sudden arrive at. Sometimes I think we put too much on that coming into a relationship with Jesus. Did I give my life to Jesus? And we expect that all of a sudden there's like it's all taken care of. It's actually a journey that God invites us to. It's this journey of coming to a place where, you know what, I find this so unfulfilling where I am, God, but I want to bring this to you. I want you to actually fill me up. I really want you to meet me. And that's why Paul says to these people, he says, each of you should continue to live in whatever situation the Lord has placed you and remain as you were when God first called you. This is my rule for all the churches. He's speaking to a group of people who say, okay, I've got this new life. I've got a relationship with Christ. Now, can you fix my relationships? And maybe I just need to fix them. So if this doesn't work in a marriage, then maybe I just need to move on. Or maybe if I'm single, are you saying that And they're trying to understand this. Are you saying that the only way to live then is to remain single and abstain from sex no matter what? And Paul's trying to bring some clarity to that. He's saying that regardless of where you are there in that place, I can give you contentment. And you, when we read Philippians 4, we realize that this isn't something that can, that necessarily happens automatically or in a single prayer, but it's really a lifelong thing. Paul says in Philippians 4, verse 10, he says, I have learned how to be content. That's a really important word. I have learned. You could say, I am learning how to be content with whatever I have. I know how to live with almost nothing or with everything. And he says, for I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. That God is there to give us the strength in whatever situation we might be. And in this passage particularly, he's talking about that place in life, singleness, marriage. And if Jesus is my reality and identity, I can be called and I can be fulfilled and I can be single. Now, a lot of people may say, oh, that's easy. I found that. Others might go, you know what? I'm really struggling with my singleness. I'm struggling with being there right now. And Paul really wants to emphasize here in this passage that one's not morally better than the other, but both are incredibly valuable to God for accomplishing what his purposes are, what he wants. So when Paul, in this passage, you hear him say, you know, I wish that all people were unmarried like him. Paul is a single guy. He's saying, what you can do when you're single is there's a sense of single-mindedness that you can have about living out your faith. There's actually some great benefit in the place that you're at. Paul recognized that he couldn't be married and have kids and be planning churches like he was, getting thrown in jail. It just wasn't going to work. And so Paul here isn't criticizing marriage, but he's saying that actually, when you're in a single state, there's an incredible way that God will lead you. He can use you in specific and unique ways that a married person cannot. So he's saying you can embrace that gift of singleness where you are. But you can also know that both singleness is a gift from God and marriage is a gift from God, and he will lead you towards whichever gift he has for you in your life. There's an incredible amount of settledness that happens in a person's life when one recognizes that. When you recognize that being single doesn't mean that I'm incomplete. I think sometimes in the church we can give way too wrong an impression that way. I think oftentimes churches, maybe especially in suburbia, kind of create this image that, you know, really it's about being married and moving on with your life and having kids and that you only fit. And I hear that. I hear that even in our context. And I think it needs to be affirmed that singleness is an incredible gift of God. And the person who is single is every bit fulfilled where they're at as well. Now, if that's not your gift, and Paul says, you know, I'd rather have you marry. If you know that celibacy, like if you're single, then God says, I want you to live celibate. If that's not your deal, then he says, there's a pragmatic aspect to this. And that is, it's better to marry than to live with frustrated sexual desires. It's not everybody's gift. And so the wonderful thing is, if you're single and you can come to God and say, God, you know what? I'm open to that. If you have singleness for me for the rest of my life, I actually surrender to that. And I know that you complete me, that you will use me, that you've got a great plan for me. And it creates this incredible sense of a person who knows who they are. Now, one of the most important things, and if it isn't, then you can say, God, you know what? I know that you've got a gift of marriage for me, but I'm going to go about my life. I'm going to be smart about this. Obviously, I'm going to enjoy relationships. I'm going to get out there and involve myself in relationships. But I'm going to be a person who knows who they are. You know, ultimately, a person who knows who they are is probably one of the most attractive people that there are. There's an incredible amount of neediness out there, I think, today, where a person is really looking for that ultimate person. And we kind of buy into this place, this situation where we believe that there's one person out there who's going to fulfill everything in my life. It's just not real. It's just not true. That longing that we have is actually for God. And so what Paul is saying here, and this is a different viewpoint than the world, when you have this vertical self, when you have this reality with God, you can live fulfilled. You can live fulfilled. And in fact, God can use you in unique ways. Enjoy it. Even if it's for a time, you can live that way. Another point that we can gain from this passage is, I can be fulfilled in life with or without sex. Now, I know in most situations, most messages we get is that, you know, sex is like food, water, and shelter. Like, you can't live without it. If you watch a lot of sitcoms, the basic image that's sent is, like, if you're not having sex maybe at least once a month, it's just like you must be really deprived. Like, something's really wrong with you. There's a common kind of viewpoint out there. And Paul's here saying, you know what? If your life is being called to that kind of celibate life, you can live without sex. And in fact, even within marriage, there's going to be seasons, there's going to be times when you're not going to be sexually active. And there is an incredible fruit of the Spirit that releases and actually is a channel towards so many other fruits of the Spirit, and it's called self-control. And Paul talks about this, and he recognizes there are limits on this whole thing, especially in marriage. That's why he says, if you're married, like, don't make it difficult on your partner. He's actually talking about an incredible amount of equality in marriage. He's talking as a husband, make sure that you're meeting your wife's needs. As a wife, make sure you're meeting your husband's needs. Be real about this thing. And he says, even if it's for prayer, like, don't be super spiritual. Like, don't do this forever kind of thing. Like, make sure that you are living that out and enjoying the gift of sex within marriage. But he also is saying, you know what? There is something here that you can do. And Paul was living it. And that is to recognize that I can live fulfilled and not be sexually active in my life. That it's not something that I have to go to. And I know that this is a very normal and natural desire. I talked a little bit last week about moving towards pornography and how completely absorbed it is out there. There's various polls out there, and it's unbelievable, actually. And maybe it isn't. The percentage of people that are really struggling and are moving towards addiction in this area. And I talked about it last week. There are oftentimes gaps in our life that create this cycle of addiction when it comes to that. And I think one of the wonderful things about getting to know God and being honest with Him is becoming honest in our hearts about what is it that's drawing us that direction? What is it that's moving us there? Can I unpackage this? And the wonderful thing about community is coming into an honest relationship with a few other people and saying, you know what, this is something that's real in my life, and I want to move out of this. And God is there. Part of that pursuit of holiness and wholeness is a recognition that I'm broken and I need to move there. God is saying, you know what, I want to develop this fruit of the Spirit in your life called self-control. And I think sometimes a single person might think, well, you know, if I just got married, that would solve my porn lust problem. It actually can complicate it, because relationships are complicated. And there's a whole lot of kind of variances there that are at play. And actually relating with a real person rather than an image that isn't real on a screen is a completely different deal. And so God calls us, and this is what Paul's saying. He says it's good to abstain from sexual relations. He's saying God can work things in your lives. And even in that song, it says trials. Maybe in that trial, God's doing something mysterious in us, and He's moving us a certain way. You know, there's a very classic experiment done in 1970 with the whole idea of delayed gratification. You might have heard of it before, but there was a psychologist, Walter Mischel, who conducted an experiment with four-year-olds, and he put four-year-olds in a room with a marshmallow and a bell. You heard of that? And the child was said, this sounds cruel almost, but you can have that marshmallow right now if you ring the bell. We'll come in and give you the marshmallow. But if you don't ring the bell and just wait till I come back, you're going to get two marshmallows. So then they videotaped these kids, and it's fascinating to see them, you know, kind of looking at this thing and picking it up and just touching it and bringing it a little bit closer to their mouths. And some of the kids rang the bell in less than a minute, just boom. I need that marshmallow. I need it now. And others lasted up to 15 minutes. The fascinating thing is, this was done in 1970. They tracked these people into adulthood. And they found that those who exhibited the least amount of self-control actually were more likely to become bullies, receive poor grades in school, and have substance abuse problems by the time they were age 32. The kids that waited went on and did better in school, became healthier adults. 1970, 4-year-olds, I recognize I was 4 in 1970. I'm glad they didn't test me in this. I would be like, oh, I want that marshmallow right now. You know, the point of it is that delayed gratification, even when it comes to our sexual desires, is something that God can really use to shape and to mold us as people. And we can learn to enjoy sex as a gift to give and not as a right to take. And there's a powerful kind of blessing that comes through that in our lives. The last point that I want to talk about has to do with marriage. And it has to do with a marriage that Paul addresses a unique situation where you might come into a relationship with Christ and your partner may not have that same reality, that same identity. And you find yourself living unfulfilled in that relationship. And Paul's making the point that I can be called and I can be fulfilled even in an unfulfilling marriage. Now, certainly there's situations in marriage, and even addresses those situations where a person says, you know what, this isn't working, and that spouse leaves. He says, be at peace. Don't stop them. He's not talking about the kind of marriage that's characterized by infidelity and affairs or abuse. And there's other scripture that addresses that. But he is talking about that marriage where you come into it and you're able to live together. And a lot of, I think, these Christ followers here were saying, well, you know, if God's really going to use me, well, then maybe I just need to move on from this. That he's got something, a calling with somebody else. And Paul's saying, I just want to affirm to you the covenant relationship, the permanence of marriage, that God's ideal is that two people would live together and love each other for all of life. Now, God is very understanding about our human condition and about situations that happen, and I really believe in fresh starts when marriages do dissolve. But I know that what he's saying here is God can actually use you in a very unfulfilling marriage. That you can, through gentleness, through respect, through living out a life that is grounded in your reality and identity in Christ, if that's possible to do that within marriage, God will use your life to speak to another person. And in a marriage relationship like that, I think it's so important that one's life speaks even more than one's words. Because nagging never works. Nagging is always going to go the opposite direction. 1 Peter 3, verses 1 to 16, talks about a lot about this, but it talks about having a tender-hearted kind of attitude, keeping a humble attitude, about paying back with blessing. And it says that if you pay back blessing, it says that God has called you to do, and he will bless you for it. Then he says if somebody asks you about your Christian hope, he says be ready to give an answer, but do it in a respectful and gentle way. You know, God really wants to work peace through our lives. He wants us to bring that kind of centeredness, that kind of identity that says, you know, no matter what might be happening in this horizontal relationship, I can find my grounding and my sense of identity in God. There's a word here too, and I think it kind of is an extension, and he addresses it in other words, but for a single person looking to get married, choose someone who's also called and fulfilled in Jesus. The recognition here is that if you are in a marriage where you don't see the same reality of Jesus and your identity in him, there's going to be challenges. It will be challenging. And there'll be a part of your married life that is going to be missing. So don't go there. Don't start dating and getting into a relationship. Don't start becoming intimate with somebody who doesn't have that same sense of reality, that same calling and fulfillment. It really only on a practical level makes sense. And so Paul is addressing these kinds of things. He's saying to those engaged people who are saying, well, should we just call it off? You know, because I want to live fully for God. He's saying, well, no, if marriage is your gift, then go there. Enjoy it. It's a wonderful thing. To the single person, he's saying, but if you are called to be single, live in abstinence. Bring that part of your life to God. He will give you what you need. He will work out that fruit of the Spirit of self-control. And for a married person, recognize that this is something that's is given to the other person. Enjoy your sexuality as a gift that's given, not something that you live in marriage demanding. God's saying, I want you to take all of yourself and your sexuality as well and bring it to me and say, God, you know what? I want you to become my fulfillment. I really want you to bring me towards holiness Bring me towards wholeness. Take the parts of my life that might be broken, and could you put it back together? And I think communion is that place where one can express that again, where one can just, in one's own heart and mind, just saying, this is what I want. Communion, I've got a statement up here. Communion is a statement, and it's a desire. It's really saying, God, I want you to be my reality and my identity. I will eat and drink of you until fulfillment enters my soul in the situation where you call me to live. God's saying, you know what? Whatever place you might find yourself in right now, God says, I can fulfill your heart. I know we just take a tiny little bit of juice and a little cracker, but it's symbolic. It's something symbolic that says, you know what? I want you to completely fill me, God. I want you to live through me. So we're going to take communion. I'm going to invite the worship band to come up. They're going to lead us in an incredible song, The Wonderful Cross, because it really is wonderful that God would give everything for us so that he could fill our lives with all of him. That no matter what situation, you might be here this morning and you might find yourself in this relational place where singleness, marriage, sexuality, whatever it is, God speaks to us, I know, very uniquely. Whatever situation, he's kind of putting his finger on and saying, God, and you just say to God, you know what, God, I want you to meet me. I want you to fill me. I want you to work in the situation where I am. And I just surrender myself to be used by you. The way we're going to do communion this morning is going to give you an opportunity to pick up the cup. And it's going to be at the back this morning.